Yeah, continuing our talk on transgenderism, and I'm amazed at just how much things have really morphed and changed since I even wrote this study. I mean, it is, kind of unbelievable, just some of the new issues that are happening. But we, again, just to give you a little bit of needed background, because, you know, we took Easter off, I want to kind of review some of the terminology, okay? And so the big thing that they bring up is that there is a difference between your biological sex and your gender, okay? And so the language is the sex you were assigned at birth, which was based off of your genitalia, right? But your gender is who you regard yourself as. And so it's and when these two things are out of alignment, right? If, let's say your sex is male, but you feel like you're a woman, you have something called gender dysphoria. Okay? And so that is the condition that many people find themselves in. And the solution is to do a transition. And there's different ways that people go about doing that. If you guys have free time, if you ever want to watch, like, the sex change, but it's called gender confirmation surgery. It's not sex change surgery anymore. So it's all about the words, right? It's all about the words. But it's it's a pretty brutal surgery. It's a pretty brutal surgery and all that goes into it. And so, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But we talked last time how, you know, transgenderism has really gone viral. And so I've kind of, you have people who are gender fluid, you have people who are transgender. People who are gender fluid, I guess they go by they, them, because they don't want to be confined to binary categories of gender.
What does that mean?
You know, it's hard to keep up with this, to be honest. But my understanding is it's they haven't really decided.
Or they don't feel like they belong in either category.
Yeah.
Don't want people to.
So one day you're one, the next day you're the other one.
Yeah, so it's they, them. So,
Julia's roommate for next year is they, them.
They, them. So not trans, but gender fluid.
But I have a client that on his email signature says he, him, his. I'm like, well, what's the point?
Why is he that?
You're not.
Well, that's kind of a shout out where he's using his personal pronouns.
He's an ally.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's this kind of new, but the big thing is there's a difference between gender and sex, between your soul and your body.
Guess.
There's a bifurcation
that's what that
goes
means.
On there. And so the big thing is you don't want to be binary. Don't want to be binary. So you have no future in computer programming. You know, if you're a bad computer
science. Wow.
Thank you for laughing, Scott. You can count on the dads.
I didn't get that at all.
You're not missing.
I'm trying to spice things up. Thank you, Scott. Seth, you can back me up too. Thank you. You're
0110.
Yes. They used to say there's 0-1 types of people in this world.
So some of the issues, why this is a big deal. One is it's really a cause right now because it's all about the children, right? Transgender people have a remarkably high rate of suicide. And why that is the case is they live in a society that doesn't accept them as they are. There's something called minority stress. And so what we need to do is create an environment that affirms them and celebrates them so they don't feel like killing themselves. Right? That's the reason why many people are driven towards this. There's this idea that we need to, you know, reach them while they're young, because if you intervene early enough, your voice won't. And let's say you know, girls and boys, like at 10, they have the same pitch voice, right?
Sure.
And so if you intervene early enough, they can still keep the high voice, and that will help them transition, so you don't have a woman with an Adam's apple and a very deep voice. Does that make sense? I'm not saying if you don't need to agree with it, but that's how they look at it. So early intervention is really important to save the lives of these kids. So you have look at top of page 6, some of the issues that are coming up, and there's some other issues too that you guys might want to bring up. Number one, do you allow transgender people to use the locker room or the bathroom of their choice? So if somebody identifies as transgender, like at Emporia High, and they're in gym class, and Harry becomes Sally, does Sally, which locker room do they use? Or do you single out like a unisex bathroom and say, Sally can use this one? Or do you say, well, Sally is going to use one of their choice, and if you have a problem with that, you use the single-use bathroom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are incidents. And in fairness, they're rare, but there are instances, like what I kind of mentioned here, where there's some indecent exposure that does go on. But I know that there's also cases where some young women are getting bladder infections because they don't want to use the bathrooms at school. So they just hold the urine inside the whole time. And people might say, well, that's because they're bigoted and not understanding and they deserve that. But it is an issue that is going on. And I wouldn't be surprised with all the, and I don't know this, with all the reconstruction that they're doing at the high school, are they building gender-inclusive bathrooms?
Well, I know that back quite a few years ago, there was a change, and they added like a single use, add like a shower and stuff, and so it was partially for like kids that poverty wise they just don't get showers, you know, so they could go to school, but it's also like a either gender could use it, but as far as I know, there's no renovation to the locker room.
So are there
at this point?
What is the policy at Emporia High as far as which locker room you use?
There's no public policy on saying what a transgender student that I've been made aware of.
Okay.
I'm sure there will be. Yeah, I'm sure there
at some point in time there will, because there are transgender kids at Emporia High. Do you allow a transgender teen to play girls volleyball? Compete in track. And so that's one thing with women's sports. You do have some serious concerns and issues there. Do you give a scholarship, to a mediocre male sprinter who then identifies as a female? And the Olympics, they're still kind of working out this policy, but my last I checked, you had to be on hormone therapy for about a year, and your estrogen levels have to be at a certain hormone level. But the issue is, when you grow up as a man, you have better bone density and a larger heart. And that doesn't go away with hormone therapy. So you still have a competitive advantage, even with that, even if you are softened because you're on estrogen.
You're broader.
Yeah. And I think it really shows itself, and you always see, when you go male to female, you can have athletic success. But how many female to male have the same type of athletic success? Another one is, how do we educate children about transgenderism? Should doctors... do you try to create... If the goal is to create a climate where they feel accepted and included, then you start... You write books about it, and you have those books being read by drag queens at Drag Queen Story Hour. And so there's a lot of things that they're doing to try to educate, the younger generation so that they're more open and they're more accepting. Another issue is, should doctors prescribe puberty-blocking hormones to gender dysphoric youth? And so that's something, like, if you read the news in Arkansas, where the legislature actually passed a law that you can't prescribe puberty blockers to gender dysphoric youth. And this is what puberty blockers do. They they basically stop. It's a hormone to kind of restrict hormones that cause puberty. And a couple of the side effects that they have noticed is, normally when you go through puberty and you conclude your transition, you stop growing. What puberty blockers do is they don't restrict that. And so if you're on it, you actually get taller, but you get less bone density. There is some speculation that it might lead to sterility or decreased fertility. They don't know that yet. So the science goes back and forth. And so what's really interesting is when you look at the pros and cons of like mayoclinic.com, it gives you some of the physiological side effects. But what are the pros? You feel better. You kind of clear it up, you know, so it's a psychological benefit as they're kind of changing the body. But you look at it as pituitary blockers, they're not really actually healing a physiological problem. I mean, it's kind of like if I have my hand is all scraped up and I take a pill to make sure that it doesn't clot. Right? Is that a healing medicine? Right? If you're taking a drug to stop a biological process, is that really healing? And so it was really interesting because you look at, the Arkansas law is banning puberty blockers for kids. But at the same time, you have other places like in Oregon where you're not allowed to give any therapy that discourages a transition. What do you call that? Reparative surgery or
Reparative therapy.
Yeah, we're not allowed to kind of counsel somebody that maybe you're actually a boy or you're a girl. Like that would be allowed for minors. That would be disallowed for minors because it's traumatic for them. So you kind of see how you can prescribe puberty blockers, you can do all this stuff, and you can't tell them otherwise. You know, there's a one way track to where you can go through this.
How can they possibly say that that's traumatic for an underage, for a young adult, whatever you want to call it, when there's such a high rate of suicide? Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you possibly...
Yeah, they say the rate is high. I mean, the popular narrative would be, kid grows up in a conservative home, he's having these feelings, parents don't support him, he despairs and kills himself. Right? So a lot of times they will say that's the narrative that we're trying to stop. We're trying to rescue these kids. And I think there's a valorization of suicide for that to really take hold. So that's why we always hear they were a victim. I didn't understand the pain that they were going through. That is how people talk about suicide now. Instead of the person was a coward.
Yeah. It also, that narrative, because they clearly see, you know, a strong correlation between depression and suicide, it requires that there's always has to be mistreatment, persecution, mm-hmm. Bullying, because mm-hmm. if not, then it would be associated with the transgenderism itself.
Yeah.
And so that's why the narrative never allows for any possibility that a person could be feeling depressed, mm-hmm. transgender, dealing with these, and in some kind of supportive, loving family environment.
Yeah.
It's not, doesn't register in the mindset.
Yeah.
Well, and usually what I've seen in my own school is those kids who do tend towards that sort of thing. We don't have any transgender kids, but we've got some homosexual kids. They are the ones that you could see years back. They've got some major problems. They're from a really poor, broken family.
Yeah.
And then, like, that's well in advance of them ever thinking, oh, maybe I'm not my gender.
Yeah. Yeah.
The broken home leads to that.
Yeah.
The broken child.
Is transgenderism associated with the sexual abuse as children or not?
No one's going to study it.
No one's going to study it.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that the data, in any of your research, it's like a lot of the scientific research, you know, whatever the popular beliefs are, that's going to fund studies that will support certain findings. And if you come out with any other finding...
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to get published because peer review is going to get rejected mm-hmm. because it doesn't agree with the peer mindset at the time.
Yeah.
So there's a very, there's a lot of research that's been done by a few people just talking about how the balance between, say, a conservative liberal mindset in academia has skewed so far that people aren't able to articulate any other viewpoint. And so peer review has become... It has to pass the liberal worldview.
I've always, been taught or just understood that homosexual and lesbianism, many many cases, is a result of sexual abuse as a child.
I think in many it is. I can't say it absolutely. I think there's multiple paths to get there.
I see.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes frequent pornography use can lead to that, especially in women. Where if you find somebody who a young woman who's looked at a lot of pornography, they will struggle. They inevitably struggle with that as well. Mm-hmm. So pornography could be part of it. And I think depending on gays and lesbians, are both of them are kind of different stories. So
I got one other question.
Sure.
Back to number one about which bathroom. Originally, the narrative was out that, you know, sexual predators would take advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. Dress up.
They could, and they could.
Is that mentioned anymore?
You know, I mean, it does happen, but I think in fairness, it is rare.
Okay.
Conceivably, it could happen, mm-hmm. but in fairness, it is rare. But there are documented instances where that happened.
But it generally is not getting any press anymore.
Yeah.
This is where I get frustrated because if anything, why not at least you yourself are claiming to be oppressed, why not try to be understanding both ways about this, at least, at the very least, and be understanding?
Well, part of it is just the worldview that we're in right now, mm-hmm. that's really rising. It's kind of something called critical theory, that there's groups of oppressors and people who are oppressed. It's mm-hmm. the oppressors and the oppressed. And the problem is that we live in a world that is dominated by the oppressed. And we will not make progress as a society until we loosen the shackles of their power and reorient things so that the oppressors are no longer oppressed. So there's a systemic problem that needs to be addressed.
So the oppressors are no longer
oppressing.
Oppressing.
Yeah, the oppressors are no longer oppressing. There we go. Sorry. Got my tenses all mixed up. But yeah, so that's why it's a societal problem that needs to be solved. So it's not live and let live, because if you have a live and let live, then the oppressed, you know, are still oppressed, and the oppressors can still get away with it. So justice demands some sort of upheaval. So that's why we need to change society from this binary oppression. And so that type of thought applies to, let's say, race relations as well. And right now it's applying to trans youth. You become a cause, a rallying point, and people who are inclined to overturn the system will get behind you and become an ally.
So because there's a hierarchy of the oppressed, like at the very bottom is the transgender black
Muslim.
Woman.
Yeah, throw in Muslim
so
there too.
Man who is acting like a woman, right? Like, and it goes up. So it used to be that it's like, we need all these rules, we need all these laws, basically to protect women, right? Like, why do we have separate dressing rooms? It's not for dudes, it's for women. Mm-hmm. Why do we have separate bathrooms? It's for women. Why do we have separate sports?
Yeah.
It's for women, right? Mm-hmm. Because we just recognize that the power imbalance, the physical power imbalance between the two, mm-hmm. and you know, likelihood of who's going to be preyed upon, mm-hmm. who's going to lose, whatever, favors men. Mm-hmm. But now, women are not nearly oppressed enough in the hierarchy. So who's more oppressed? Transgender people are way more oppressed. And so you have to take all of these gains that were made for women and throw them out the window in favor of whatever it takes to help these few suicidal, depressed, transgender people.
Yeah.
And it all comes back to the hierarchy. It doesn't make sense unless we think in terms of a hierarchy of oppression, mm-hmm. which is why it doesn't make sense to us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but live and let live just doesn't. Love the sin, hate the sinner. No, love the sinner, hate the sinner. Man, Lord, help my sermon.
We have a few minutes to get that
straight. I'm in trouble.
So, that's been an interesting progression. So I left ESU in 2017, and right before I left, I'd been serving on the Faculty Senate. And so issues like these can't come up. And that was one of the more recent issues was, okay, so what do we do for these people who don't identify as male or female or, you know, like, or whatever the case might be. And so the solution was, well, hey, we've got some separate bathrooms. We can create more. And everybody said, okay, great. You know, that works. And here we are, what, 4 years later, and even at the high school level, now that it's trickled down, that's not enough. It's not enough anymore to do the separate bathrooms.
It has to be complete integration. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we live in a society where a young man is just as willing to date a trans woman as a real woman, mm-hmm. that's when you know you've arrived. Right?
And you have to have compliance, and everyone has to agree. Yeah. Any sign that you don't agree is punishable.
Yeah. I mean, so you wait. You know, somebody's going to be black. You know, let's say he goes on a date with a girl, he falls in love, and then he realizes what? And he breaks up with her. That guy, there'll be a time, point in time when that man is shamed as being bigoted. Like, he won't be.
Because it's a dude.
Because it's a dude. Yeah. So it's going to incrementally go to this ridiculous point. The other thing about puberty blockers, too, when I looked at the pros and cons, one of the cons that they will say is it prohibits genital growth in men, which is a problem because if you do transition surgery, gender confirmation surgery, you won't have enough tissue to make that happen. So isn't it interesting how that is a con, right? It's all related to going in that direction. And so, yeah, that's just the way society it has moved and progressed really, really rapidly.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, where that's a con to puberty blockers. I know. I felt the same way, Seth. So you look at what does the Bible say about transgenderism, and I think in many ways, especially when I wrote this study, I wrote this study maybe 4 years ago, we were caught pretty flat-footed. Here's a quote from Pat Robertson. I've never been a fan of Pat Robertson, by the way. And you'll be less of a fan after you read this. But he sat down for the advice portion of the 700 Club, and he says this. Talk about a transgender coworker. Was asked about a transgender coworker. He says, I think there are men who are in a woman's body. It's very rare, but it's true, or women that are in men's bodies, and that they want a sex change. That is a very permanent thing, believe me. When you have certain parts, body parts amputated, and when you have you're shot up with various kinds of hormones, it's a radical procedure. I don't think there's any sin associated with that. I don't condemn somebody for doing that. So, how can someone like Pat Robertson, who clearly opposes homosexuality, support sex changes? Or gender confirmation surgeries, right? We're not allowed to say sex changes anymore. Gender confrontation. Confirmation. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, though, like, thinking about the language. Like, in the previous, like, there was a belief that your sex and your gender were linked. So if you change your sex, you're changing your gender. Mm-hmm. And this kind of exposes that the mindset that's been broken. Mm-hmm. And so gender confirmation language kind of depicts that they've adopted instead of more of a permanence. Well, my gender is permanent. Yeah. I have to assign my.
I'm bringing it into alignment.
Right.
Right.
And it's interesting the warpness of our minds when we try to rationalize things, that oftentimes there's little remainders of things that people will try and hold on to in terms of, for example, the gender confirmation that, well, when I transition, then that's what I will always be. There's not a, well, maybe I'll want to transition back. There's this remainder of, it's warped, but there's still this idea, well, that's, I'm one thing, and I will always be that one thing. So it's,
yeah,
that's interesting to me.
Well,
how do you know you're not going to want to? Well, because that's, well, maybe that's really how you are already, type of a thing. So.
Yeah, so what's, in all of this, all the new language that comes up, right, where you have to say things a certain way, there's a new speak,
mm-hmm.
which I'm behind on, to be honest. But I thought about it, it's like, how important is it? I guess if I was talking to somebody and wanted to be sensitive, I'd want to use language that they could understand. But even this change from, it's no longer a sex change, it's gender confirmation, there's a slight value judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That is there. And so if you always have to use that language and keep up with that language and do that, then language defines reality for a lot of people.
I think
so.
Like,
moving from sex change to gender confirmation, that is that definitely stacks the deck in favor of.
That signals approval.
Exactly.
You say confirmation.
Yeah, so you have to say gender confirmation.
Which one is truth and which one is confirming the truth?
Yeah. So they're changing the sex, which, and there's a problem with that because you really can't change the sex.
Right.
Exactly.
Confirming the gender, right? So that's why, you know, maybe, you know, people might correct me, oh, it's actually this, 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 and this. It's like, well, that's what it is now. A year from now, I don't know.
And I think it's a good, I think it's one of the most applicable things of our discussion is learning how to, like when you have a conversation with someone, it takes effort to understand what they actually think because it's so foreign, but also knowing how to make distinctions on, no, that's actually what I meant. What I said, you know, I don't believe X, Y, and Z or whatever it is those language things indicate, so that, and I think about a lot of my kids at the high school, I think that there's a lot of them that there's a vacuum of truth in their life, from parents or church or anywhere where they're hearing things, and many of them know instinctively that, you know, some just basic truths about the world that God's revealed to them, you know, there's men and women, and they just need sometimes just a very few people to speak things plainly and truthfully, and they are, yeah, that's true, that's obvious, but there's a huge social pressure that they have. They're looking for someone, like, you know, just say what's obviously true. And so sometimes, that's, I think, that my struggle sometimes is learning how to, like, this has been really good, to try and understand, like, what people are saying, because sometimes we get into we don't really understand what they're saying. Like, a lot of times, they'll recognize, well, you know, I am a male sexually, but my gender is like, oh, okay, so you're not, you understand there's a difference between a male and a female. Yeah, I understand that difference. So, but also being able to verbalize our view. Well, I believe that those are linked together, and that your sex and your gender are the same. And that's the way God created you. And there's lots of opportunities I've had with kids, and they say something like, I actually don't believe that. And I'm like, really? You know, like, I believe that this. It's going to be much more, it's like the gospel, how it's so fresh. And when someone has been in the world and lost.
Because this is the message from, right, the government. Really the media, right? They have corporations who are...
academia.
And now even some churches.
Some. I don't call them
quote unquote cults.
It's like cults and apostate gatherings. So you look at it, it's like, so who's resistant to this?
Churches.
It's really evangelical churches and maybe some conservative think tanks and institutions. So there definitely is an uphill battle. So when you look at but you look at going back to how can Pat Robertson say, I don't think it's sinful? How could he argue that? How could it be against homosexuality, but not necessarily against a sex change?
Well, he's had a track record of being wrong in so many ways.
So he's not a Christian.
Pat Robertson is like a television.
Well, I mean, TVN. How easy is it to prove from the Bible that homosexuality is wrong?
Very easy.
Very easy. How easy is it to prove that transgenderism is wrong?
Yeah, see, at what point do you sin? You know, when you feel that way, or when you think that way, or when you actually take action?
Yeah, and because this is a case where this would not exist apart from technology. Mm-hmm. Without hormones and the surgery, this wouldn't be an issue.
So if you're born as a male, and I choose to change it, then I'm telling God he was wrong for choosing to make me a male.
And that would be, and that's kind of the issue. You see, we're kind of dealing with something that's not explicitly prohibited, because this is a technological issue, kind of
so
like in vitro fertilization, right?
They would identify it as part of the category of things that is wrong because of the fall.
Yeah.
Because of the fall, you know, just like you have babies born with genetic problems or whatever, you also have people whose bodies don't match their brains. Mm-hmm. And they would say that is a result of the fall.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing in, you know, gender confirmation surgery, hormones, treating them this way, the whole bit,
is we are trying to mitigate and ameliorate the effects of the fall, which is an act of grace to them and mercy to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the line on the religious left.
Yeah.
And anyone who is against that, I mean, it's just cruel.
Yeah. Just, you need to be compassionate and believe them. That's their lived experience. Yeah, so that's how that would be the argument. And I think for certain people, it's kind of like, oh man, I can't really disagree with that, especially if you have somebody in front of you who is seriously struggling with that issue, right? Because of all these things, and then, well, it's the fall. The fall has just messed them up. And then they would point to somebody who was born intersex with an XXY chromosome combination, okay? And which, that argument is not as strong as they think it is. So we'll talk more about that in the future. So I think what you have to do when you argue with, I've been harping on this gender and sex thing, okay? I'm gonna just kind of switch it over here to the soul and the body. You know, for this ideology to make sense, you have to make a hard and fast line between the soul and the body. Okay? And believe it or not, I mean, that is something that was in dispute in the New Testament. Because the Greek thought at the time, and I mentioned this when we talked about the resurrection last week, right? Was the body is just corrupt and is evil. I mean, the physical, material essence of things, that's just, you know, that is something we want to get rid of. And to think that that would live forever and be eternal is just outside the Greek mind, right? But Paul argues that if Jesus does not physically rise from the dead, all hope is lost, right? So the biblical narrative affirms the goodness of physical creation. And as what we're going to see is that there is, well, actually, I'm going to just say this. Here's the body, right? And then here I'm going to double use the, and here's the soul. They are inextricably linked together. And when these things are severed from each other, what happens is what?
It's called death.
It's called death. The body and the soul are inextricably linked together. To be a human is to have both in place. And then I would argue that your body determines your soul. Specifically, God's calling on you and your life. And that is why, you guys know the term egalitarian and complementarian? Complementarians believe that there is a difference between the male calling and the female calling. You know, where the men are called to lead, protect, and provide, to use their strength to serve the women. The women, you know, they're called to help nurture life and bring life, you know, into the world in whatever capacity that the Lord may give you, right? And we know, like, men are called to be leaders of the church and of the family. You know, women are called to joyfully submit. And that's, you know, so in the family context, you know, that is the structure that men and women are to play. And I would argue that the church is a family of families. And so that now family structure applies to the church. When you get into government and stuff like that, is kind of a different field. But for the family structure and the church being a family, that's the way it works. So, but it acknowledges that there is a difference between men and women. You know, that is ontologically there. Like, women have a womb. They can carry a baby and nurture life, right? And that impacts their calling as far as what they're supposed to do. And women can't necessarily say, well, I'm going to identify as a man for this moment in our marriage so that I can be in charge, right? So there is a fixed overlap between the body and the soul. So that's kind of where I'm going with this. So I'll establish it with some passages, okay? So Genesis 1:27, somebody want to read that?
So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
So what does it mean to be made in the image of God? Someone would give it a shot?
It means a lot of things, but in part, you know, we have some of his attributes. We have emotions that God has.
Yeah. Anything, Scott?
Like we're his representative on the earth.
Yeah. We rule on his behalf. So why is it significant that he says male and female he created them?
Because he did.
Mm-hmm.
Both.
It's a black and white line to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
two categories.
You're male or you're female.
Male, female, gender fluid. The male and female, he created them. You know, and it's very simple, right? The soul and the body of the male and female were both created by God. So why is it important to note that both males and females are made in the image of God?
One is not in nature lesser than the other. And role. I mean, the roles are different, but the nature is not.
Yeah. I mean, if we had a society that really prized nurturing life, I'm saying, if we had that kind of society, then it could be that men would be having the issues and see themselves as less. But we have a society that values strength.
And when I think about, I've had this talk, I want to talk about male and female roles like in marriage, but just tying to the Trinity, that the Father and the Son have different roles, but they equally are God. And so it doesn't change your worth, your value, your nature to have a different role in lots of scenarios. We're having a different role doesn't elevate, but I think it does, like you said, it reveals this viewpoint that the whole world is just about power. And so whoever is in a position of authority or power, then that person automatically must have more value.
Yeah.
Historically speaking, we know that there's been homosexuality forever.
Yeah.
But are there signs of transgenderism?
There are some, but it's not this ideology that we're talking about here is without technology, it would not be nearly as advanced.
I mean, it's one thing putting the women's clothes on or something, but there's another thing.
That has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to actually say, I am a real, I mean, the Pinocchio syndrome, like I'm a real woman, I'm a real boy. That is something that's, apart from gender confirmation surgery, that could never really happen.
Yep.
Hormones, plastic surgery.
Yeah, and part of that is to physically mutilate the body to give the appearance, the physical appearance of it. And maybe that's happened in the past, I don't know, but this is a new construct. Yeah, and so the idea that, you know, from the fall, you have to argue that this has been the way since human history, and that's a very difficult argument to make. But you look at the following passages, and what do they teach about the integration of the body and the soul? Okay, somebody want to read Psalm 32:3?
For when I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long.
Okay, so what does that teach about the integration of body and soul?
He's saying he kept silent about his sin. 32 is talking about his sin. So when he didn't repent and his soul was rotten, basically saying his body was also sick.
Yeah. You guys ever seen that?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, and it's really interesting. Like, the Greek word for compassion is phlegma, and it literally means intestines.
Saying for soul?
No, for compassion.
Compassion, okay.
Yeah. So the idea is, like, when you kind of feel compassion, do you ever kind of feel it in your bowels? So even, like, the Greek language connected emotions that we have with body parts. Or you look at the concept of the heart, right? A lot of times our heart feels stuff, right? And so the understanding, the biblical understanding of the body is an integration of the body and the soul together. Another one is Proverbs 17:22. The joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. Right? You see that too. And then this is kind of interesting. 1 John 4:2-3. Somebody want to read that?
The Spirit of God, every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God, and every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard was coming and now is in the world already.
Okay. So he makes a point that Jesus came in the flesh. If it didn't come in the flesh, he didn't really come at all. Now, they would say he came in the spirit, but Paul's like, not so fast. Jesus came in the flesh. And you look at the resurrected state, right? There is a goodness to the body. There is an integration between the body and the soul. So how does the integration of the body and soul help frame the biblical assessment of transgenderism? And why is this such an important truth to establish?
It shows you can't separate sex and gender. You can't separate body and soul.
Yeah. You can't separate sex and gender, and that's exactly it. Right? Now, when you look at the fall, I mean, obviously the fall impacts our body and soul, like disease. Soul is with sin, but those two things being out of alignment, well, there are some fixed biological realities. Like, before the fall, what's the call on men and women? To do what? To be fruitful and multiply, which implies that they use their sex to perpetuate the human race, right? Now, has the fall changed that? We're still called to do the same thing. Noah got off the boat, they're told to be fruitful and multiply again, right? That's kind of a fixed. You even look at the curse, right? The woman will have pain at childbirth, right? So childbirth, you know, that sex role plays, even impacts the curse. So if a man becomes a woman, is he now under Eve's curse? Did that just happen? No. He's not. Can a woman no longer be under Eve's curse? I guess you could have a hysterectomy or whatever.
That's a curse in itself.
Curse in itself. Yeah, so those are the... does that make sense? Like, there's no severing between body and soul that we see in Scripture. Yeah, so let's look at Genesis 1:28. Somebody want to read that?
And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth."
Okay. So what role do both genders play in the fulfillment of the mandate?
Rule the world.
Yeah, they rule the world, right? So what role does a woman play? What role does a man play? And this is where I think when you kind of look at how the curse kind of rounds this out. Like when the woman's curse is
multiplying part.
The multiplying part. And the man's curse is
the ruling part.
Well, working the ground, right?
Yeah.
And the idea is that you will succumb to it. And frankly, you know, men are given the physical strength to do that. Where women could do it at short spurts, but the long, you know, taking the plow and the hoe and all right, so each of their parts are, each of their roles in that are uniquely cursed, which kind of shows a kind of a division of labor.
But both of them also, both of these, all parts of the mandate also require both genders.
Yeah.
Like you can't have a community of men who are fulfilling all of any of these parts.
No.
Or a community, you know, Amazon women, they're not going to be.
They're not going to be able to multiply. Yeah.
Multiply or really have dominion.
Yeah.
How many women could really break an out and cultivate ground?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and if you're being fruitful and multiplying, then
you're just weaker from that, like caring for the children and
So all humans are created with the ability to fulfill this mandate. And their gender, sex, shows which role they play in it. Men are not to carry the child. They can't carry the child. And I'm going to just stick with that element because that's the safer ground. I mean, and some women have strength and stuff like that, but we have a society, Beck and I were talking about this the other day, where it doesn't require as much strength to live right now because of technology. But as it stands, women, only women can carry a child. And during certain seasons, women are uniquely vulnerable. Right before childbirth, during childbirth, after childbirth, right? Where the men never lose their strength in that element, yeah.
I was just thinking about, you mentioned before how some transgender, you know, pursue the gender confirmations and some don't, like the surgeries.
Some don't, yeah.
So I think, you know, it seems like there'd be easier place to kind of argue if they're pursuing it, because it seems like those that are pursuing it want gender and sex, they believe they should match. And that's something we believe. Mm-hmm. And so we could say, well, we just don't believe sex can be changed. And that's why we want we encourage people to live with the gender that matches your sex, because those are linked in. Because those that are pursuing the gender confirmation, they also believe my body should, body and gender should match. Yeah. I think it would be different if they believe that my body needs to stay male, but my gender
and that
should
is true.
Be female.
Yeah,
there's less.
Is, like your body, and what you see here is your body determines your destiny. This is kind of what I'm driving at here. Mm-hmm. Your body determines what kind of curse you get. Your body determines what role you're to play. And you look at the separation of the genders, and I'm using gender and sex interchangeably on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The separation of the genders determines what part you play in this mandate. So you can't switch sides, so to speak. Because your genitalia is critical, your hormones, your cell structure, your DNA is critical to your ability to fulfill this mandate. It's body-driven.
Mm-hmm. I think
the mandate is body-driven.
One other thing I would add is that, Carissa and I, through our marriage, as we learned about the roles of husband and wife, mm-hmm. we had a lot of conversations about what that looked like in our marriage. And I think that we each noticed a difference in, like, our marriage, our kind of satisfaction in life, our work with God, as we began to accept and take on those roles and feel like, this is what God created me to do. And there's a certain fulfillment and joy that comes, you know, as you fulfill those roles and understand them. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain, like, uncertainty when it was like we didn't really know or have talked about, like, okay, who's doing this, who's going to do that, what should I be doing, what should you be doing, what should we be doing, and so I think there's a sense in which we can get like a tiny taste of, like, magnify that times a thousand to someone who has no idea, and they're being told that no, you should do this, and so the more they live in contrast to what their sex and their gender, God's role for them, that the worse their life becomes, because they're constantly, going against the design way that God made them.
Yeah. Okay, so that's our bedrock argument here. That God created male and female, and it's defined by your sex, as demonstrated by the curse, as demonstrated by the call. And so, genetic code you were given, whether you have a Y chromosome or not, really determines your destiny. And that's the thing, like, gender confirmation, you can't change every single cell. You can cosmetically mutilate your body to look like the other sex. But the DNA is still there and is still fighting against whatever they do. I mean, you become a permanent patient when you undergo gender confirmation surgery or sex change surgery. Well, we'll go ahead and stop there. So hopefully this has been helpful for you guys. And let me pray. Well, Father, we do thank you for just your word and the clarity it gives. And I thank you for this group of thinkers who are trying to reason through and wrestle through many of these issues.
And Lord, we know that many young people are very confused by this, and I pray that you'll use our church to offer much needed clarity. In Christ's name, amen.